Welcome, boys and girls, to Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with no direction. This is the Christmas episode, so Merry Christmas. At the time of this recording, we were talking all about the Yancey Street Comic Book Convention. If you're listening right now, then the convention already passed, so we hope that you were able to make it there. We were there, we had a great time, it was a blast, and I hope the guys do it again next year. So, without further ado, enjoy.
Upon perfection.
Now, here's what threw my mind. I thought Todd McFarlane made the most money.
Yeah. And
I thought Todd McFarlane was the star artist. I mean, I knew Jim Lee was, you know, I liked Jim Lee somewhat, but I didn't realize Jim Lee had more money than those two guys. But we're not putting this on yet.
Oh, you're not recording this now?
Yeah, he's been recording this whole time, dude.
I've been recording for a while.
Oh, my God. I guess that's a good time to say it. Hello, ladies and gentlemen, and welcome to... Hey, ladies and gentlemen, this is Two Dimension Comics, the podcast with...
the podcast with no shame.
This is Two Dimension Podcast, the podcast with no direction. This is episode number 17. And I am your host, Dallas Busha, and with me is...
Don, how many beers have you guys had, dude?
Ow.
And it's Rook, and I hate to tell you, but I've actually not drank as much as he has for once.
I don't know about...
If history is any lesson with Dallas drinking, and when Dallas and I drink, he should be throwing up on himself any time
now.
Oh, my
God.
That happened, like, once.
Twice did I take you to the club, twice did you get us thrown out, and twice did you throw up upon yourself.
Oh,
upon myself.
I started to change my opinion to be down.
The best is the first time it happened, right? So I'm actually in the bathroom, and I'm taking a leak, and one of the bouncers walks in that I know, and he's like, hey, man, you know, we're talking and stuff, and all of a sudden we hear this... bouncing off the walls, and all of a sudden, and all I caught was the back of Dallas running into the stall, and the bouncer goes, oh, now I gotta throw another one out. And I'm like, hey, you know, that's my buddy. Let me take care of this. And so I had to actually escort Dallas out of the club.
Man.
Yeah.
You know I'm going to edit this part out, right?
Oh, wait. It gets better. So on the way home, right, now we take Dallas to the car. We put him in the car. And we all continue to drink. Later on, the husband and wife that we're with, they decide it's time to go. So she's had enough to drink, you know, and he wants to get home. So we get into the car and we start driving home. We get pulled over. And...
the driver's sober.
Driver's stone cold sober. Oh, yeah. Perfectly fine. As the cop is walking up to the car, she opens the passenger door, starts throwing up out the door. Dallas starts throwing up on himself. I'm sitting in the back seat watching this whole menagerie, laughing my ass off, asking the driver if he's sure he's sober, because I'm not. And as the cop gets to the window, he goes, how can I help you, officer? Just deadpan serious, like there's nothing wrong going on in this car at all. How can I help you, officer? You know what it turns out? We had a broken taillight.
Yeah, that's right.
Unbelievable.
Well, all right. Making a segue, I'd like to talk
you
about...
Do you just want to reintroduce the show and cut all of that out?
Pretty much. No, that's comedy gold right there, as Mao would say. Now, I would like to... first, I want to bring up to everyone that on December 18th... Is that right, Rook?
18th.
December 18th, Yancey Street Comics is going to be having a convention, and we would love for everyone to be there.
We're
going to
have it all up on the Facebook and the blogs and everything for you guys.
We'll be blowing it up, and it's on December 18th. The convention's in Largo. What's the name of the place?
The Mini Rig Center. It's right next to Honeywell.
Mm-hmm. Now, you can actually find all the information also on Yancey Street Comics' website, which is yanceystreetcomics.com. The street is just ST. Or you can go ahead. They're located in Port Richey, Florida. You can give them a call at 727-817-0888 and get a little more information about that as well.
And tell them that Two Dimension Podcast sent you.
And yeah. Also on the sidebar of the blog. So if you just want to, just go there. There's a little sign that says Yancey Street. Click on that, and it'll take you to them.
Yeah, absolutely. That's actually probably the easiest way to do it. Now, if you tell them that, the Two Dimension sent you, they might kick you out. You're definitely not going to get a discount. But fantastic, great, great local comic shop. Rook swears by them. I love going there. Al and Don don't live in this town, so they're a ways away, but they've been there, and they both love the place. They've actually both gotten some amazing books there. I mean, they love the place wherever they go.
It's a good store.
But check out the place, and as far as the convention goes, the four of us are going to be there. We're going to have a blast. We're just going to be shopping the hell out of that place, getting as many books as we can, and really looking forward to you guys coming. So hopefully we'll actually be able to get to meet some of you. We probably know all of you guys that are listening. We have, what, two listeners?
Two, three.
look for me. I'll be dressed as Guy Gardner, the real cool Green Lantern, unlike the other fairies.
I'll be dressed up as the host of Two Dimension Podcast. But it'd be great to meet up with you guys, get a bite to eat, have a drink, just whatever.
Especially if you're buying.
Yeah, exactly, that too. If you're interested, though, either show up or shoot us a message on Facebook or on our blog as well. We'd love to hear from you guys. So that being said, gentlemen, and I use the term loosely, what's going on?
I'm scared to talk after all we started the show with right now.
God, who are your favorite artists?
Let me go back to the happy place.
15 freaking episodes of that stuff.
What are we actually going to do? What are you reading for this episode?
We were, and one of the main reasons.
I don't even know where we're going right now.
We really don't. Well, this is probably the first episode that we haven't really had a main topic to jump on, so... Hence the unraveling after the first 8 seconds, probably. Well, okay. First off, I do want to do the what are you reading, because we didn't get a chance to do that. Last episode was a very Walking Dead-centric episode. We all talked about it. Al said how much he hates Walking
Dead.
No,
I don't. I haven't watched it yet.
I'm just trying to get you fired up.
Yeah, that's all right.
So we talked a lot about Walking Dead, and we didn't get to talk about the what are you reading. So, guys, have you been reading anything lately?
Yeah, I've been reading The Walking Dead.
We have made him come over to the dark side.
I wasn't watching the show. I was just reading.
We should just call this the Walking Dead podcast.
No, so it's the Walking Dead Alan Moore podcast.
Slash EC Comics ding.
Slash EC Comics. Creepy, eerie.
Creepy, podcast. Eerie. Speaking of which, and this is actually isn't one of my what are you reading, but Al let me borrow a book. If you remember a couple episodes ago, we were at Al's house, and he let me borrow a book called Foul Play, The Art and Artists of the Notorious 1950s EC Comics, and Rook's really trying to snatch it from me right this second.
That's an EC book?
You mean I have
snatched it's
it
about
from
the artists of EC, and yes. It goes over a lot of the guys. I mean, Al Feldstein, Harvey Kurtzman, Joe Orlando. I mean, some of the greats. And it's really neat. Each of it's got short biographies about each of the artists, and it goes through a short thing about their life, and then a lot of their art, and a lot of their their works. And I think after each biography, it's got like an 8 to 10 page story that was drawn by them. Yeah, I haven't really even scratched the surface. I've only gotten through the first 30-40 pages or so, but it's great. I mean, if you're a fan of the EC books like Al is, yes, then you're really, really gonna like this. I mean, it points out all the artists that have gone throughout the history of EC.
God, I'm just like browsing through this, and I'm just thinking, man. Myself, man, nobody draws this way anymore. This is just so beautiful. I love the way the stuff is drawn.
Oh,
I mean,
yeah, it gets that Joe Orlando stuff, man.
The only thing I didn't like on EC, I didn't like their lettering. They used one of those Leroy sets.
They did for the horror comics, yeah.
There was one artist I was told that didn't. One artist did his own lettering, but I didn't enjoy the Leroy
that
lettering.
Was Al Feldstein. The Harvey Kurtzman War books had
had a Ben Oda did the lettering for those.
Oh, really?
Yeah, it was actually a manual lettering.
It was actually a person.
Yeah, well, yeah, Ben Oda went on. He was a DC, I think, for a long, long time.
He was inking for Creepy and Eerie too. Ding ding.
Yeah, thank you. That's great. So he was real prominent in the 50s and 60s then, I'm assuming?
Yeah, he was just like, you know, he was been around for a while, I think. Right. I think he was a Golden Age guy. He was just, you know, lettering specialist.
Do you have a particular favorite with the EC stuff? I mean, a favorite artist or, you know?
I love them all because those are the guys that ended up being in the Warren magazine. So it was, I went back to read these and it was just like, oh, yeah, Johnny Craig. Oh, yeah. Frazetta and Williamson and Wally Wood.
Ooh, John Severin.
John Severin, who's still alive at 91 years old, drawing comic books.
And that's
still
right.
Awesome.
Oh, really? He is 91.
Oh, that's awesome. A testament. That's a testament right
it
there.
It really is. Well, that just shows that it's a passion for him. It's not. It's obviously not just a paycheck
or
a job.
His work has been solid from the very beginning all the way to now. When you see it, it's, you know, like us, we've always talked about, sometimes some artists will do a backslide. I mean, they may still be good, but you can see they just don't have the same excitement, enjoyment in it. They don't put the same amount of effort, which, you know, that's a human thing to do. But everything I see him do, it's still just as strong, and it's still, it's like a young man's work. It's still vibrant. It's still, you know, yeah. I love you, John Severin. You're the man.
His sister, Marie Severin, she's still alive, too. I think she's still doing
Oh, yeah, that's
too.
Right.
Yeah.
I didn't realize they were related. Yeah, that only makes sense.
She's and they also did a Cole, that comic book Cole. I collected those.
King Cole.
Yeah, it was Cole, and it became King Cole. But when it was Cole, I think she penciled it, and he did the finishes, but just strong.
Oh, yeah.
Speaking of artists from EC, how about that Wally Wood?
Wally Wood's one of my favorites.
Yeah,
he's one of my favorites as well. That's something I talked to Al about. He seems like somebody's kind of disappeared some. I mean,
he's so notorious, though. I mean, that name.
Well, yeah. I mean, he's still held in high regard, but you don't really see too much of his work, and you don't really hear people talk about it too much. Whereas in the 80s, he was always actively sought out. 70s, he was always right at the top.
Yeah, it happens, you know. I mean, people forget, and then, you know, you get these nice books coming out. Hopefully it inspires people to go back and, you know, read.
Well, here's a little bit I never knew about this. On Halloween night or shortly after, in 1980, Wally Wood went home, got out his gun, and shot himself to death.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, he was losing his eyesight, and he couldn't draw anymore, and I guess he was getting depressed because his work wasn't getting more. He wasn't getting that much work anymore, so.
Yeah, he when he lost sight in one eye, he lost his depth perception, and that kind of hurt his artwork. And, you know, I'm sorry, he didn't seem like he died very happy.
Apparently, another one of my favorite artists, Gray Morrow, did the same thing. He committed suicide.
Oh, I didn't know that.
Yeah, he lost his ability. I think he got a stroke. I'm not exactly sure what happened, but he lost the ability to draw, and he just committed suicide. It's really.
Yeah.
Well, Gray Morrow was one. I think he did his own lettering as well.
I think so.
And he was. I learned of Gray Morrow. It was all the Strange Adventures books that DC did. Gardner Fox wrote, and Gray Morrow drew a lot of those stories. I just absolutely loved him. He even had a syndicated strip for a while in the newspaper.
I think he did Tarzan for a while.
Yeah, he was. He'd always pop up, and then when Pacific Comics came out, he did three issues called Edge of Chaos.
Edge of Chaos, yeah, with and, Hercules kind of thing.
Yeah, Hercules. He was the guy starting a sailboat and turning into Hercules type. He was just fantastic. And then it was some book that DC put out. It was one of those books where they have a whole bunch of different artists that do a few pages each. It was Superman and Batman. This is like 86. And I just remember he drew several of those characters, and he had Batman. And it's probably the most realistic Batman I'd ever seen. It kind of looked like a man wearing a Halloween suit. And I didn't particularly care for it, even though the drawing was strong. It looked kind of dorky. And somebody in the Comics Journal wrote about it, and they said that there were staggering pages Gray Morrow wrote. And he said the same thing I just said, that it was actually probably the most realistic Batman I've ever seen. But I guess all that tells you is sometimes realism in comics isn't what you want. But I didn't know he died unhappy. He was phenomenal.
Yeah, he was a master. He did all those paintings for the Perry Rhodan paperback series that was a sci-fi. Did a lot of covers for Warren and all that. He worked as a painter. He was an illustrator. He was a comic artist. It worked all his life from the 50s, I think. I think he worked for Atlas Comics, too.
Oh, wow.
He started off with Atlas.
What comics did Atlas produce? Because that sounds familiar.
Atlas was early. Actually, there was two Atlases. The original Atlas was like the early Marvels. They were like 7 or 8 page stories, and they did all types of genre, kind of like the EC, But they, you know, a lot of, you remember all those horror stories like a Kirby, I Am Monster from Gloop or whatever.
Oh
those,
yeah, of
those
course.
Were Atlas comics,
oh, that's
yeah.
where the name.
Oh, what
came
was Stanley's
from,
uncle's
yeah.
Goodman. Martin Goodman.
Martin Goodman.
Yeah, Martin Goodman.
It was Martin Goodman's company. He had
gotcha.
Basically whatever was the popular style at the time of comics, he would follow. Or pulps. He was pulps and girly.
He was
mags,
pulps,
wasn't he?
Yeah. Uh-huh.
And girly mags, and then he popped into comics. That's when they did the Human Torch and the Submariner. And then later Captain America came on. And then, you know, whenever the fad would disappear, he would just drop it. He was timely at one point. And then later it was Atlas. And I guess that's when they were doing all the big monster stories.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
And that's when Jack Kirby and Steve Ditko came into the company.
A history lesson in every episode.
Oh,
kids.
Yeah, but that's... But
they also did, like, all sorts of genres, westerns, yeah. humor... sci-fi, horror, the giant monsters, everything.
Well, let me ask you. So you were talking about realism in comics, and speaking of some of the old Marvel characters, what was it, back in the 90s, they released a miniseries Marvel Comics did called Marvels, and it was painted by
yeah.
Alex Ross. It was written
yeah.
by Kurt Busiek.
Oh, that's fantastic.
Fantastic.
You read it?
Yeah, I have a copy of it.
Well, I wanted to ask you guys, how do you feel about Alex Ross's art and that style of realism? You know, brought into comic books. How do you feel about seeing those old characters rendered like that? I mean, a lot of artists these days kind of do that, but that was huge at the time.
Alex Ross is probably one of my favorites. I mean, I have just countless books that he worked on. Marvels, Justice.
Did you like Kingdom Come?
Thank you. Yeah, I was just about to say Kingdom Come. You know, and what really drew me in was the fantastic art. I mean, you know, just beautiful, beautiful. I mean, it's like a painting on every page. It really is. You know, I mean, it's every page is a masterpiece. That's really, it sings when you look at it. It really does.
I completely agree. I've always loved his art, and it was so neat to see these characters rendered realistically like this. You guys both read Marvels?
Have you read Marvels?
Oh, no. yeah.
What do you think?
Yeah,
about?
I really liked it a lot. I mean, Alex Ross's art was almost too good. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
It was almost too perfect.
Yeah, you almost look at it and go, what the hell is this guy doing working in comics?
exactly.
But he loves them, though,
yeah,
so great.
Yeah, and that's the best thing. That's the best thing for us as comic book
readers. He's behind the Dynamite comics. I think he's involved in them because he does a lot of the covers for them. So he's a big comic book fan, and, you know, I love his work. Yeah, definitely.
Well, yeah, he worked at Leo Burnett, the advertising agency in Chicago.
Okay.
He's an advertising guy. The first time I ever heard of him was when Marvels was coming out. It was some of those, I think it was Comic Scene magazine. It had examples of it. Well, it wasn't the kind of artwork I go for. You know, when I first saw it, you know, it'd have little scenes, you know, little panels from Marvels.
Yeah, if you remember from a few episodes ago, Don's top 10 artists.
But I saw it and I thought, well, this is okay, but at first I thought it was a little sloppy. I had no interest in the series whatsoever. And then when I saw the first issue, it kind of caught me. If you got the single issues, each one had a clear cellophane cover that said Marvels, and then when you opened it up, it was the full painting. And I thumbed through it and said, all right, I'll check this out. I absolutely loved it. It told the whole history of the Marvel Universe, starting from when it was... timely, you know, when it was
right.
The Human Torch and the Submariner and then later Captain America. It was just staggering. And a lot of times what he's done is he'd take the old panels that, you know, the original artist had done, and he just, you know, changed them around and repainted them. But it was the same compositions.
It was just reimagined versions of old images that everyone knew, like the Captain America.
Now, who wrote the story?
Kurt Busiek.
See, that was interesting, too, because one thing he was explaining... As I was a kid, I never understood why everybody loved the Avengers in the Marvel Universe, but yet at the same time, Spider-Man and the X-Men, they were trying to chase out of town. They didn't trust them. And he addressed that quite well, you know, explained the whole situation. That's the first time I'd really ever seen it done that way. But yeah, after that, every issue came out, I couldn't wait to get it.
Well, I think the strength of that story was its perspective. It was from the normal average Joe on the side of the road. You know, it was from...
From the perspective of the photographer.
That's right,
yeah.
I don't remember his name offhand,
but... I can't remember his name for life. I haven't read it in years, but...
You know, we usually, reading these comics growing up, we always saw it from the perspective of the superhero, of the larger-than-life
right.
character. And seeing it from someone that you could relate to was a really interesting idea. I thought it worked really well.
And especially to take a take a book and put it in the perspective of an average person, someone without abilities. That's really, you know, it really took you out of the superhero world and gave you that third-person perspective, which we all have as we read the books. We're all reading the books in that perspective as it is. But for the story itself to be written from that perspective was something really amazing, I think.
It's like looking in on someone looking in.
Oh, it kept going. I loved when the Galactus trilogy, which is probably one of my favorite comics, and they told it from their perspective. They were freaking out, and then finally at the very end, it was that one where the woman said, Reed Richards came in everybody's head and told them it was okay.
Oh, yeah.
I thought, yeah, that was cool. The story and art on that was just phenomenal, and it was one of my favorite series. I also liked all the Easter eggs in it. At one point, I'm thinking, well, that looks like Pete Townsend, and I look over, and there was Roger Daltrey and other members of the Who on the same page.
Oh yeah, probably on the, was it the Reed and Sue wedding?
No, it was a street scene, and later I saw the entire Led Zeppelin. I said, that looks like Robert Plant, and then the whole band was walking across, you know, in the street in New York. And every once in a while, you see old TV stars. You know,
they
get
sued for that kind of stuff these days.
It was great fun. It was a lot of fun. And that reporter that was in Daredevil, Frank Miller's Daredevil, the one that figured out that Matt Murdock was Daredevil.
He
was at one point that photographer was working with him on some series, and I thought, well, this is, you know, it was great fun. And I remember Busiak, you said, was the writer,
right?
He was in an interview. He was talking about how far he's going to go. And then he said it was a certain point. And then he said, I felt like after that, this, you know, the comic started doing a backslide. I guess it's when it got to the Bronze Age. And terrific series. Kingdom Come, that was another one I didn't like as well, but I still enjoyed it.
See, I actually enjoyed Kingdom and Kingdom Come more than Marvel's. I don't know, maybe because I read those first. I don't know. But I found those to be fantastic. And, of course, you know, I'm very kind of, over the years, become...
DC boy.
Yeah, more towards DC than Marvel, because Marvel just really kind of disenfranchised me with many of their storylines. But I thought the Kingdom and Kingdom Come series were beautiful. Not only that, but also worked on... Universe X, Earth X, Paradise
X. Oh, yeah, which
X.
You actually brought up on, like, yes. Our third episode or so.
I never read those.
Oh, fantastic stuff.
Yeah, like,
I'm
right now.
I'm trying to get all the issues of them.
If this was a comic book, you'd see an asterisk right after what Rook just said, and at the bottom of the panel it would say, see episode 3.
You know, they don't do that as much anymore.
No,
they really don't. Well, they took those away with...
Yeah, right.
They took those...
I do miss that, too. That's right, they don't tell you that.
I think a lot of the mainstream comics took those away along with thought bubbles and things like that to make it more cinematic. And that kind of hurts... That hurts the industry, because it seems like we're trying to be a different industry. We're trying to be like movies when we're not. We're freaking comic books.
I never even realized thought bubbles were gone.
Yeah, me neither.
Well, some people still
I missed
them,
too.
Yeah, I'm talking about the bit like Marvel and DC, and those companies don't use them anymore.
Well, they wanted to get away. Frank Miller was the first one I ever knew that didn't do it. But when he did it, it was awesome. But I don't want everybody not to do it.
Yeah.
You know? But yeah, it kind of went out of style. I did like Kingdom Come. I enjoyed Marvel's a lot more. A friend of mine had... It was a Kingdom Come Absolute. It was a collected one, and he added some pages to it. And at the very end of it, it had something that should have been in a regular series, where Superman, Batman, and Wonder Woman meet at that that really bad DC-themed restaurant that was in the... You know, all the waiters are dressed as the Flash. And
yep, I remember that.
Yeah.
But Bruce, you know, they went as Clark Kent, Bruce Wayne, and Diana Prince.
So that's an extra?
Yeah,
that's
it was an extra.
That's in, that's
sure
in my
version.
Yeah.
I actually remember that in my version, too.
That's in my version.
Oh, is it? Well, no. Like I said, I read the single issues.
Oh, okay.
And a friend of mine had the hardback. But, yeah, that's where they met in the restaurant at the very end.
Yeah.
And they found out Wonder Woman was pregnant.
Yeah.
Okay, well, see, that wasn't... I thought that was fantastic.
Yeah, that was great. I love that scene.
I grew up... Superman and Batman were best friends, you know, and the world's finest stories and all that.
Oh, yeah.
And I always liked that. Well, I also liked it when Frank Miller did Dark Knight, and they were basically at ends with each other. And then after that, they started becoming kind of somewhat foes. Well, I thought that was interesting, too. But I always liked the fact they were friends in the past. And in that one, it addressed it where, you know, basically when they met, and Bruce Wayne was saying, why are you telling me all this? And then, you know, Clark Kent explained to him. He says, well, even though we've had our differences, there's always a line we don't cross. And he says, because of that, I always thought we had a lot in common and we were always friends. You know, and eventually the two stood up and hugged. I just thought that was absolute genius. But those are the two pieces I read of Alex Ross. I'd pick up once in a while. Him and Paul Dini did those four oversized books about Superman. Mm-hmm. I got Superman when it was okay, but I just didn't love it. I read the Wonder Woman, and I don't think I ever read the other two.
Well, I think the Marvels and Kingdom Come are the two that he's best known for in the comics community.
Well, that and Justice.
Yeah,
for DC as well.
He's not as well known for that, though.
Well, like, it seems like he
I think Kingdom Come really made him, though. Marvel's and Kingdom Come made him.
Yeah, Marvel's and Kingdom Come probably made him, but I think Justice actually, I think, is a better story than Kingdom Come.
Well, does he do all the work on it? I mean, are they painted stories, or... See, every time I see his work, it's like Astro City, where he does the covers and, like, plans things out with other artists and writers.
Brent Anderson.
Yeah, which, that's actually pretty good, but...
Hey, Brent Anderson. We were just talking about him the other day, weren't we?
Yeah, Brent Anderson.
He's excellent.
I just remember his work on X-Men doing Belasco and the God Loves, Man Kills.
That was a great graphic novel.
God Loves, Man Kills was an outstanding graphic novel. Mm-hmm. But,
God, 1983, I think that was.
Yeah, wow. What a great year. Until I joined the Navy.
Well, boys and girls, I think we're going to take a break now. And we're going to... go on to our musical spotlight. And for this episode, I believe we have a brand new song from our in-house British artist, Steve Robinson. Is that right, Don?
Yeah, so now you say his name. You know, a name I can pronounce and you say. Yeah, this is Steve's new, he's got an EP. It's a 5-song EP. I think it's called Ride of Our Lives. It just came out. You can buy it through his site. You can get it on Amazon or iTunes.
Here we go.
talk to me, I would answer your questions. Where did I go and why did I let you down?
Speaking of fading in, welcome back, ladies and gents. And that was Steve Robinson, and that was one of his new songs off of his brand new EP.
So Ride of Our Lives.
Exactly. All right, guys. Well, I know I kind of teased about it at the beginning of this episode, but I was hoping that we could talk about what you guys are reading. Does anybody have anything, or is it just going to be dead air?
It's not dead air, and I hate to do this because Dallas talked about it a few episodes ago, but I read Fagin the Jew by Will Eisner.
It's always nice hearing, like, a different perspective on it, though.
Yeah, but basically, whatever Dallas said, that's what I say. Next.
Oh, you got a pass there, buddy.
Can we get what episode number that was so we can go back to it?
Yeah, reference. No. Hold on, asterisk.
Actually.
Yeah. Asterisk.
I've never read, even though I've seen them and I've read parts, I've never read any of Will Eisner's graphic novels. It's one of those things where I always wanted to, but I never did. Dallas picked up The Building. I actually liked it quite well. This one, I never would have picked it up on my own. I don't know why. It looked pretty nice, but the story was really strong. It starts out, Will Eisner wrote a piece about why he did the book. He was extremely upset with, in the book, Oliver Twist, how they portrayed that character, Fagin, the Jew. And he went on to explain why. Well, it wasn't, you know, I mean, sometimes when people write, it's like really upset and fire and brimstone. He didn't. He was just explaining why. And he did the whole story. He explains all about, you know, how Fagin's parents came to England. He explained about the Jews from Spain after the Inquisition came into England. And how they were basically educated people and they assimilated into English society quite well and ended up being pretty prominent members of it. They made money. They were well respected. And then later he's talking about Fagin's people coming over from, where was it, Dallas? Eastern Europe?
Yeah.
Poland and Germany, I think. Don't quote me on that. But it was a different time, and it was a different people, and they had trouble fitting in. They were basically living, you know, pickpockets and that type of stuff, stolen goods, and they weren't thought of well. And that was basically the whole face of... basically, that's what the Nazi Party was using against the Jewish people in the beginning. The story itself, I couldn't stop reading it. I enjoyed it quite well. And at the very end, he has prints and postcards from English society, and it was always Jews peddling door to door, you know, used clothing and stuff. And he was talking about the caricatures of how they drew the Jews, and I thought, well, actually, these are pretty neat drawings. But then I started seeing, like, the women they're selling it to, he said Gentile women, and they look kind of like Moshe prints. I thought, okay, they are drawing to people different. So I can understand why he'd be upset. But it is actually a strong piece of work that I enjoyed quite well, and I learned something. So if we had Jews in Oklahoma, I didn't know. I didn't quite understand why people don't... Well, I didn't quite understand why people...
I'm sorry, that's just... What
Well... You know, I never understood all this anti-Semitism and stuff and people freaking out and saying things. And to me, it's like something that existed on TV and that was all.
It's pointless is what it is.
It is pointless, but, you know, like I said, if you've never seen it, you never understood it. And so I did enjoy the fact that, you know, actually, whenever I read about Jewish people, it was always the comic creators, so it was just awesome to me. But
And Mel Brooks.
And Mel Brooks.
Woody Allen.
Yeah, it's all the people in the entertainment industry who are Jewish. Most of them. But it's a strong piece of work. I take my hat off to Will Eisner for... If it's something that upset him, he turns something constructive out of it, and, you know, you learn from it. But it is a strong piece of work, and the artwork went right along with the story. He's one in a million.
And we have to remember, at the point that he was writing this book, he was really getting on in life. He was pretty old. I have to say he was probably in his 70s, I'm guessing.
Yeah, probably so.
I mean, it's neat to see such a coherent, well-drawn and written story, you know.
It flowed. It flowed all the way through.
I think this is one of the last books he did, too. I think he did one. I believe he did one after it called The Protocols of the Elders of Zion.
What year was that? It was printed.
Hold on. I pulled it out. Here's a happy birthday card in here.
Oh, happy birthday.
Oh, thanks. Oh, it's from work.
Oh.
2003.
Oh.
So, yeah, I mean, it wasn't that long ago. And when did he pass away? Like, 06, maybe? Somewhere around there? We could probably Google it, but I'm just
too lazy.
I think
it was 2005, 2006, probably one of those two times.
Mm-hmm. Right. It was around there. So this was, you know, really close.
Yeah, it was a strong piece of work. I was reading it because Dallas insisted, but I enjoyed it quite well. So I would recommend it. If you're going to read some Will Eisner, if it's not the spirit, Fagin the Jew is actually quite well.
Story and art, what do you give it on a scale of 1 to 10?
I'm going to give the artwork a 6, and I'm into the story. I'm going to give it a 9. To me, the story is what... The artwork was great, but the story was it. I like stories that make you think different. You know, and like I said, this one, it was something I didn't quite understand when I went into it, and it made me understand a lot more of what's going on. So it was a strong piece.
Speaking of Wally Wood... Okay, I like to talk about Thunder Age. It's one of my favorite comic books from the 60s. It was published by Tower Comics in 1965. Thunder Age was basically a team of superheroes that were kind of like Man from U.N.C.L.E. You know, Thunder was an acronym for, let's see what it is right here, the Higher United Nations Defense Enforcement Reserves. And they were basically got their superpowers fighting this warlord, and they got it from a scientist who was killed, and the three superheroes... were No Man, Dynamo, and Mentor. Dynamo got like a belt that turned him kind of like into a Superman kind of guy.
Which
but it
was
only
awesome.
Lasted, it was awesome, but it only lasted 30 minutes.
Not so awesome.
Not so awesome. No Man was able to teleport his body into these androids. So you would think you would kill him, and then he would switch over to another body, and he'd come back and zap you. And then Mentor has telepathic powers. So at any rate, the deal with these guys was that they were basically like working for the United Nations, and they were like superheroes by day, but after it was basically their day job. After that, they had normal lives and this and that. But they're usually fighting. They were usually fighting a guy called the Warlord, who was like a underground. Guy who had his minions fighting for him, and then they went on to fight other characters, and it was Wally Wood's best stuff, I think, from the 60s. Wally Wood's involved in it, Gil Kane's involved in it, Mike Sikowski did a bunch of stories, Frank Giacoia. Most of the writing was Wood, too.
Oh, wow. Most of the art Wood, or just
most of it is inked by Wood. George Tuska does a lot of work. Ditko's in here getting inked.
Ooh,
by...
Ooh, you got some Ditko.
You got Ditko. You got everybody from the 60s, all the big boys involved in this. And what I really like about it was it's like short episodic stories, so every issue was like 50 pages, and you'd get like a story from each of the main characters. And then like in the next issue, you'd pick it up, and there would be a continuation, and then maybe not, just a brand new story. But it was just fun 60s comics. The one character, Mentor, that was in there was actually a traitor But he kind of got killed off in the fourth, I think, no, the sixth issue, and that was like a first for comic books around there. They really didn't kill off that many main characters. He was later replaced by another character called Lightning, who was kind of like the Flash. The deal with him was he had the Flash's speed, but every time that he turned on his powers, he would lose a year.
It lasted 30 minutes.
He would lose a year of life. So that was the deal. So that was a little...
See, that's something you don't see much anymore in comic books is consequences to powers.
Yeah, right. So, you know, they basically got their powers from this, like I said before, from a scientist that got killed fighting the warlords. So that was, you know, and these powers were given to them. And this is Archives Volume, this is Archives Volume 2, published by, I think Dark Horse is publishing these. And I think they're up to like number 7 now.
This is DC Comics.
This is did DC get the rights? Okay, because there is a new DC comic book of Thunder Age.
Well,
so how long?
Is DC.
How long did the original series last?
From 65 to 69.
Oh, okay.
So basically, they cashed in on when all the superhero stuff was going on, and it was basically created by Wally Wood with Len Brown, who also was involved with Tower Comics, and Sam Schwartz, who was an Archie artist, was the editor on a lot of these, which I just found out today by reading about
that.
It. So, but yeah, there's 7 volumes out right now of these, and they're a fun read, and you know the wood art's always wonderful, and like I said, him inking Ditko is a treat in there. You got like Crandall.
Is.
Him inking Reed Crandall, which was like another great artist. So definitely, like, I'll give it like a, for art, I'll give it like a 10. For writing, it's fun stuff. It's not rocket science or anything like that. I'll give it like a 6.
Who's the woman in the armor?
That's the Iron Lady.
Yeah, that's awesome. I had one of these comics when I was 6 years old. I bought in Texas, and it was like a convertible, and there was 3 of them jumping down into it. And I just thought it was neat. You know, it's a Thunder. I like Thunder. But I don't remember too much else about it. The comic, you know, like I said, I read it. It ended up getting tossed, and that was it. When I was in college, I started hearing people saying they're bringing back the Thunder Agents. And that's when I started learning that Wally Wood had done them, and I realized it was that comic.
You're like, I still like Thunder.
Well, yeah. But it's... Thunder Ages has come back several times. I guess at one point in the 80s they said it was in the public domain.
I think I read it. It's supposedly the originals are in the public domain, but somebody named John, a guy named John Carbonaro did them in the 80s, and he changed them up a little bit. So he owns that version of the Thunder Agents, and I think he licensed that version of the Thunder Agents to DC for what they're doing now.
Oh.
But they work for the United Nations, which I thought was interesting.
There was some new stuff. There was another character called Undersea Agent.
He never dealt with the Thunder Agents. I read about that. There was another guy that came in called Raven later on, and I think his superpower was just like a rocket pack that he had or something.
Well, there was one character I saw in some like Comics Journal. It was a Gil Kane drawing, but he had like wings on his head, and he was like acrobatic or something.
I think that might be Raven.
Oh, that was Raven, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I never read them, but it's one of those things, even though I never read them, I know all about them. I've seen the drawings, there's always panels, and it seems like I never read them, but they don't ever go away.
Well, they're a lot of fun. And there is an Archie connection besides Sam Schwartz. Apparently one of the guys who was involved with MLJ was involved with Tower Books, and Tower Books... later, you know, decided to put on Tower Comics, and Sam Schwartz obviously was the editor, and he was an Archie artist for Jughead, and he also created, I think, something called Tippy Teen for Tower Comics also. So that's why when I was a kid and I was finding the bags with the 3 comics, there was always like a Thunder Agents and an Archie comic. So, yep, Thunder Agents, awesome.
Very nice.
That's okay.
Rook, you been reading anything lately?
The only thing I've actually been reading lately is some of the new books, the current stuff coming out, and I gotta say that most of the current stuff I'm reading is crap right now.
Oh, I was so excited about hearing current stuff, because we never talk about anything new on this show.
Yeah, we're all old. Well, tell us about the stuff that you think is crap.
Talk to me about the crap you're reading. Of course, everybody knows I'm a huge Ghost Rider fan, and... Ghost Rider's back on the shelves again, but the way they're going is just... it's horrifying to me. I mean... first off, they bring it back, and Blaze passes on the Ghost Rider powers to a guy, and then he puts them into this girl. Now, I don't care that Ghost Rider's a girl. Cool concept.
Yeah.
Lame execution. Lame execution. For one, you put Ghost Rider back onto a, you know, sportster-style, you know, bike. You know, I'd much more prefer my Ghost Rider on a Harley. Eh, go figure. As I wear my Harley Davidson t-shirt. But it's just, you know, you're seeing some interesting powers coming from her, but it's something I much would have rather they done with Blaze. And, you know, with Road to Damnation that they did a couple of years ago, Blaze was finally starting to become a powerhouse. He was starting to become something impressive as Ghost Rider instead of just this, my head's on fire and I'm going to kick your ass, you know? And he finally, with Road to Damnation, when he broke out of hell, he came back and he had some really cool powers. And it's just, while the new Ghost Rider has cool powers, it's just the execution overall is not impressive, and it's not going anywhere interesting to me. Past that, I'm reading Hack Slash, which is always fun, campy stuff, you know. I mean, it's nothing, you know, here you've got, you know, Casey Hack, and she chases after Slayers, which are your classic horror movie characters, like your Freddies, your Jasons, the guys that murder teens in the camping trips and then come back again from the dead. You know, it's fun, campy stuff, but it's nothing impressive right now, you know.
That one's been going on for a little while now, hasn't it? I always hear about Hack Slash.
Yeah, Hack Slash has been going on for a while, and for a while I've been hearing they're going to do a movie, and I've yet to see any kind of previews or production notes about it, so we'll see what's going on with that. Like I said, it's fun, campy stuff. It's nothing, you know, nothing to be serious about, really. Walking Dead is kind of at a stagnant point right now, where it's building to a crescendo again, and it's just a matter of you waiting for that next break point in that series. Still a good read, you know, still enjoyable, but nothing fantastic going on there. And then, of course, still reading The Boys. The Boys.
Wow,
is,
that's still going on, huh?
Yeah, The Boys is still going on, and they're actually just finishing up their Butcher Baker Candlestick Maker, which is the origin of the character Billy Butcher in the series. Some interesting little twists and turns going on in his origin, but nothing really unexpected. Nothing to make you go, wow, that's why he's like that. It's just, you know, I'm kind of stagnant right now with the books I'm reading. I'm looking for that next great title. So if anybody's got a great title out there that you're reading, suggest it to me, please, because I am banging my head against the wall.
Or just send us comics.
Oh, yes. Yeah. Hey, if you're a comic book publisher and you're listening to this right now, I need something good to read.
Rook, if you ever get bored, I will just give you my entire collection of Cerebus.
I'm fine with reading collections and everything. It's just that, you know, I'm one of those that wants to watch for the future of the comic book industry. And right now, I see nothing going on. You know, the whole new 52 thing has really just kind of gone to the wayside with me. I saw nothing in the first couple months of the creation of the new 52 that makes me go, I have to read that.
Have you read any of them?
Yeah, I've read several.
Which ones?
Let's see. I read Batman, Superman, Justice League. I browsed through Aquaman, but come on, he's still Aquaman. No matter who's writing it, it's still freaking Aquaman. Nobody cares, you know. But there's been nothing in the new 52 that's really impressed me, and so I'm just kind of. I'm going to actually stop by the shop on my way after we get done here and see if anything's, you know, pops on the shelf, but I don't expect it to.
One title I'm looking forward to reading, and I haven't yet, even though Don's let me borrow it, is Chew.
Yeah. You know, I tried Chew out. I got the first two issues, I think, and just, I don't know. Yeah.
Well, that's on my little pile here. So once I get to it, Don let me borrow the trade with the first, I think, six issues in it.
Yeah, my daughter picked it out. I went to see her up in Tallahassee, and they have a lot of nice stores out there. I picked up something, and then she showed me True. I said, yeah, you can get it. So before I left, I read it. I really enjoyed it. I thought it was a clever idea. I don't know. It was some kind of a virus in the future, and they made poultry illegal.
And this guy has like some kind of psychic connection to everything he ingests.
Yeah, whatever he eats, he sees everything that the animal saw. So like if you're eating a pig.
Well, not just the animal though, but like vegetables and crap too.
Yeah.
I mean, everything he puts in his mouth, he can see.
It's a neat, interesting concept.
The entire history of that item.
But I mean,
really,
for the whole time where it's been brutalized, it's been cooked, everything. He sees everything, he feels it, and so basically, the only thing that doesn't do it is beets, and that's the only thing he eats is beets. And he works for, I guess, the police department or the department.
He originally was a cop, but then he ended up in what was it, the FDA, Drug Administration, or no, it was something real funny. It was like, you know, a food inspector or something.
But they send him in, and whatever happens, he has to taste the food and tell them. You know, he sees everything and tells him what happened, and which is something he doesn't enjoy. There's some crazy chef that shows up in the thing later. I enjoyed it, and I thought, well, I'll read this series. And I kept telling my daughter, this is really clever. I figured she'd, you know, collect them and I'd read those. And she read part of it. She came back home from school and said, here, you can have this. He didn't like it, no. And so I guess I'll never read this series.
I'll give it to you. It is a clever book. It's very fun. You know, it's kind of very campy in a way. But it's, I don't know, it's nothing I'm long-term going to be interested in.
Well, if one of you guys had it, I would, you know, read them. I would enjoy it. But it's not something I would want to go out and get myself. But it's absolutely in some styles that some people would go for. I really enjoyed the thing. And I guess they were selling chicken in, like, speakeasies.
Yeah.
And they were always busting people because everybody wanted chicken, and you couldn't get it. It was illegal. So it was always, you know, hidden places, kind of like crack houses or something. I mean, the idea was clever, and the artwork went good with the story. It wasn't an art style I particularly cared for. I mean, it was good, but it wasn't the, you know, it didn't match the aesthetics I always liked. But
well,
I'm looking forward
to reading it.
I'm pretty sure
I'm going to be reviewing it on the What Are You Reading, and I'll probably say the exact same thing that you guys have been saying. But, well, I got nothing.
Oh, come on!
You got nothing?
I'm in the middle of reading a really good book, but I don't want to, I want to wait till I finish it to talk about it. So,
can you at least tell us the title of the book?
It's a Joe Sacco book, who is a comic book journalist, and it's called Saif Area Garajda. It's about the Eastern Bosnian War from the early to mid-90s. It's a really, really interesting book, but I kind of want to wait till I finish to tell everybody about
it. Well, it's fine.
So it's good.
Is it a comic book?
It's a comic book, Okay. Yeah. He's a comic book. He's a journalist, but then he transcribes a lot of his journal entries into comic book form, and he's great.
He's done other comics, too.
He's done a lot, yeah. He's done Palestine. It was one of his most famous. But, all right, gentlemen, I think it's about time for us to call it quits for this episode. So,
okay.
I hope everyone's enjoyed listening to this one, this train wreck of an episode. I think we brought it together at the end, though. I think it got pretty good.
Yeah, you're going to have to, like, do some serious editing.
You think.
Only on the beginning.
Except on my messed up take.
Well, if you want to hear any of our other cohesive episodes, you can check us out on our blog.
We have cohesive episodes?
We do. There's, like, one or two of them.
One or two.
There.
Yeah.
It's check them out at twodimensionpodcast.blogspot.com. That's 2-T-W-O. And that has a list of all of our episodes, and underneath each episode link, there's images and links to the content that we talked about on the episode, so you can learn a little more about them. And then underneath that, you can leave a comment. So if you do, we promise that we will respond to you. You can also find us on Facebook. Just look at Two Dimension Podcast on Facebook, and we'll respond to you on that too, except for Rook, apparently.
I'll never buy a computer. My computer's broke. What do you want?
Well, thank you so much, everyone, for listening to us. We hope you enjoyed it. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we enjoyed making it, apparently.
And look for the next episode probably in about a week and a half. And until then, take care of yourselves and read more.